I want to welcome everyone to this evening's shiur. It's incredible to think about the fact that come this Thursday, Shivasar B'Tammuz, the 17th of Tammuz, we begin the period of the 3 weeks. I say it's incredible to realize because I think throughout these last few months of the pandemic, there have been many things that have changed and many things for which we have an altered perception. I think time is one of those things. That the notion that, you know, all of this started Purim time, or right after Purim, we went through a Pesach, a Shavuos, into the summer, and now up to the 3 weeks. And of course, once you get to the 3 weeks, you know that Yomim Noraim, the high holidays, Chodesh Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, are sure to follow. So what I hope to accomplish over the course of this evening is to be able to frame the 3 weeks experience in a meaningful, contemporary fashion. Because to be honest, the difficulty we often have with this time of year, the period between Shivasar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, is that we often find ourselves mired in mourning for which we have little appreciation. Of course, you know that as Jews, we miss the Beis HaMikdash, we pine, we yearn for the Beis HaMikdash, we want Mashiach, we want Geula. But the notion of intense mourning for something that we never knew, for something we never experienced. Remember, we haven't had a Beis HaMikdash for 2,000 years. And the notion of spending 3 weeks mourning for something for which we have no frame of reference, for many of us is difficult. And as such, very often this time of year often comes and goes without all that much contemporary relevance. Now, of course, it is true that it is during the 3 weeks that we also take the opportunity to mourn all of the tragedies and catastrophes of Klal Yisrael. Remember, again, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash was the beginning of a process of exile, a process that we are still in the midst of to this very day. And every calamity and every catastrophe and every terrible event, tragic event, that has befallen our people somehow is rooted in that initial destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So as such, while it is true that we do not simply go ahead and mourn the absence of a temple, as Rabbi Soloveitchik writes, we never mourn buildings. Buildings can be built and rebuilt. Even the Beis HaMikdash, as holy as it was a structure. We can rebuild the Beis HaMikdash today if we want to. Rather, we mourn the loss of a way of life. We mourn the loss of a civilization. We didn't lose our peoplehood. We didn't lose our religion. But we lost what was. And over the course of the 2,000 years, we mourn the millions of lives that have been lost. Those losses all entrenched in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But what I would like to try to focus on a little bit this evening is how some of the motifs of the 3 weeks really convey to us not only how to mourn for the Beis HaMikdash, but how to lead and how to live more impactful lives. So if we take a look on your source sheet, I'm going to go a little bit out of order here. The Gemara in number 4, which is the Gemara Maseches Tainis, quotes an interesting idea. The Gemara says, Mikan Amru, whoever mourns over Jerusalem will be privileged to see in its joy, in its happiness. And he or she who does not mourn for Yerushalayim will not see the joy of Yerushalayim. So again, on a most basic level, the Gemara teaching us the idea that if you want to rejoice in the rebuilding of Yerushalayim, if you want to rejoice in Geula, in redemption, it requires you to participate in the mourning and the loss. So I've always felt that this Gemara, on a basic level, teaches us what it means to be part of Klal Yisrael. What does it mean to be part of a people? What does it mean to be part of a collective? What does it mean to be part of a community? What it means when you're part of a group is that you share in the experiences of the group. And even if your personal experiences do not mirror those of the group, you still share in the trials and tribulations of the group. So it could be that I look at my life and I say, Baruch Hashem, everything is great. Everything is fantastic. All is in order, all as it should be. But for Klal Yisrael, it's not. For Klal Yisrael, as a nation, we are in a state of disrepair until we have a Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, if you mourn for Yerushalayim, if you share in the grief, even though I might not be able to shed a tear on for Yerushalayim, but I feel in an existential fashion that there's something missing, that there's something incomplete. If you share in the pain of Klal Yisrael over the destruction, Zochav Ro'a B'Simchasa, then you will be privileged to be able to go ahead and share in the Simcha. He who shares in the pain will be privileged to share in the joy. And conversely, he who does not share in the pain will not share in the joy. If you're not part of the klal, you're not part of the klal. So if you're not part of the klal, if you're not part of the collective for the tzaras or the difficulties, then you're not part of the klal for the simchas either. But it struck me that what the Gemara may be conveying to us is something exceptionally profound for in general in life. You know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who was a Swiss psychiatrist, came up with a five-step model for dealing with grief. Now, interestingly enough, her initial clinical work was not with grief. Her initial clinical work was dealing with end-of-life patients, hospice care, terminally ill patients. But she adapted some of the things that she learned to create a model for dealing with grief. And if you look at her five steps of grief, I put an image here on the sheet right across from source number four. So you'll notice again that it goes in a progression. First, there's denial. So denial, again, on a most basic level, I can't believe this occurred. I can't actually believe that this happened. Anger. Now, anger is interesting because the anger could be directed at different people. Sometimes when I lose a loved one, I'm angry at that person for leaving me. Person didn't have a choice. They were ill. There was an accident. Something happened. But you're somewhere good. And I'm left here all by myself. It could be an anger at a doctor for who you feel perhaps did not properly care for your loved one. But there's anger. So there's denial. I cannot believe that this is happening. Anger, bargaining. So bargaining, often that stage is often described as the if only stage. If only I would have done this. If only I would have said this. If only I took my loved one to the doctor a little bit earlier. If only I took those complaints a little bit more seriously. So again, almost as if there's this illusion that I could have done something to prevent this. I could have done something to somehow change the outcome. Next step is depression. And again, within depression itself are also multiple levels. And once one goes through the depression is where a person realizes, I can't deny it anymore, it is the reality. Ultimately, again, there's still the anger is still there, the bargaining is still there. I could have done this, I should have done this, I'm angry, why did you leave me? Why am I here all by myself? And this results in a state of depression. But when one comes out of the stupor of depression, one gets to the last level, which is acceptance. And that is where one is finally able to accept the reality of their circumstances. This is my new life. This is my new reality. This is my new world. And perhaps, even before Dr. Kubler-Ross had these five steps of grief, Chazal already understood it as well. And perhaps, again, what Chazal are saying about Chazal really focusing on step number five. Kala mis'avel al Yerushalayim means whoever accepts the enormity of the loss, zocha beroa besimchasa, will be privileged in Mirat Hashem to see the simcha, to see the redemption, to see the building. You see, the only way to move on to consolation, the only way to move on to the next phase is first to accept that which has been lost. And what Chazal is telling us is something so amazing. So many times in life, people don't accept their grief. They don't accept their loss. You know, the Torah tells an incredible example of this. If you take a look at number five, so the Pasuk says, this is after Yosef was sold by his brothers. And so the Torah HaKadosh tells us, Vayikra Yaakov Simlosov, Vayosem Sak Mamasna Vayisabel Albino Yomim Rabim. So Yaakov even tells, because remember again, the brothers bring back a bloody garment to Yaakov. So Yaakov has no idea what occurred. He just assumes that Yosef has been killed. He assumes that he's been killed by a wild animal. So the Torah says over here, he rips his clothing and he sits down in mourning for his son for many days. Number five. All of his sons, all of his daughters got up to try to console him. He refused to be consoled. Ki ered el bini evel sha'ola. I will go down to my son. I will go down literally again. I will descend on account of my son as a mourner to the grave. Yaakov Avinu refused to be consoled. He would not accept the enormity of this loss. He could not accept it. Now, Rashi points out there's a good reason he couldn't accept it. Rashi says in number 6, Vayimayim lehistachim, how could he have refused the acceptance? How could he have refused consolation? Ein adam yachal lekabel tanchum min alachayim v'savar shemes. Sha'alameis nigzira gezir sheishtachach min alei v'lo alachayim. Rashi says something amazing. Kadosh Baruch Hu programmed us, literally translated, it means to forget the dead. But it doesn't really mean to forget the dead. What it means is when a person undergoes loss, at first, that loss is front and center. It's everywhere I look. It occupies my conscious thought every moment of every day. But then what happens? You know, people say time heals all wounds. I've always thought that is not a true statement. Time does not heal many wounds. But what the passage of time does is it takes trauma and it could take it from front and center and push it back a little bit into the recesses. So I could have a day, I could have an hour, I could have a moment where I'm not thinking about my loss. The problem was, of course, we know the story, Yosef wasn't dead. So because Yosef wasn't dead, Yaakov Avinu was unable to accept, he was unable to move on. But I thought that this is such an incredible idea. Because, you know, the notion of grief, you know, we often associate grief with death. But the truth is, people have grief for all kinds of things. People have grief, chas v'shalom, people struggle with different things. I had a dream that was that I had a goal, I had an aspiration, something I wanted so badly to occur. And then it didn't come to fruition. And not only did it not come to fruition, I failed so miserably. There's a sense of grief when what you want to accomplish doesn't materialize. The same way that a couple who struggles with infertility, there's a grief that's there every single time a pregnancy begins and then it ends. I bet you'll say, but it wasn't a viable child. It wasn't a child at all. It was 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, a month. This doesn't make a difference. There was a possibility there. And when that possibility is gone, there's a sense of grief that sets in. And I think we all struggle with grief in different ways. I would imagine that there's not one of us who doesn't grieve over something we've lost over the course of life. Maybe we grieve over relationships we've had. How many parents are there that don't speak to children? And how many children are there that don't speak to parents? And how many couples, even ones who are married, who don't speak to each other at all? I stood with that person under the chuppah. I stood with that person under the chuppah and we loved each other and things were good. And we had all these goals and aspirations and dreams for our life. Or when a parent first holds their child, and again, they dream about that lifelong relationship, and then things happen. I grieve over that which has been lost. But the shaila is, what do you do with your grief? So my dear friends, I think many times, when it comes to the grief of lost dreams and aspiration, the grief over things that have just not materialized the way that I thought it would, I think we often try to ignore it, or try to mask it, or try to medicate it. And I don't mean like in a pharmacological way. I mean like we try just different things to push it aside. I don't want to feel the grief. I it's done. It's done. But what Chazal is teaching us is something so incredibly amazing. When we come to the 3 weeks, do you know what the first step of the 3 weeks is? The first step on Shivas Shabbatamos. And remember, Shivas Shabbatamos, we don't even go as Shabbat. It's not about the burning down of the Beis HaMikdash, social Beis HaMikdash. Shivas Shabbatamos is the breaking of the tablets, the breaching of the walls of Jerusalem. But the process begins with a sense of acceptance. I accept that this is how my life is. I accept that I don't have a Beis HaMikdash. And I accept that that void is going to be there. Nothing's going to fill that void. My shul's not going to fill that void. My yeshiva's not going to fill that void. My shir is not going to fill that void. My chevra's not going to fill that. There's a void. There's a void. And I accept the fact that it's there. You see, we're so scared of living with grief. We're so scared of living with the void that sometimes in life we do anything and everything just to push it away and pretend like it's not there. How many of us have unprocessed grief and trauma from failed life initiatives? How many of us have unprocessed grief and trauma from dreams and aspirations we had from the time that we were young, that I was so sure I was going to accomplish this, but I didn't. I haven't. Sometimes because of circumstances beyond my control, and sometimes because, I don't know, I just gave up. I just stopped trying. But we have unprocessed grief. We haven't accepted the grief in our life. And so Chazal come along and say that during these Bein HaMetzarim, during these 3 weeks, the first order of business is accept your grief. Kol HaMis'abel al Yerushalayim. Kol HaMis'abel al Yerushalayim. Zocha v'roa b'simchasa. Whoever accepts the grief will be able to move on. Because you see, my friends, unless you accept the grief, grief is that, right? Acceptance is that step number 5. You can move on from acceptance. Acceptance is not the end of the road. Acceptance is the 5th stage in the process of grieving. But after you have acceptance, then there's consolation. Then I could move on. Once I stop saying, I can't believe this happened to me. Once I stop being angry. Once I stop saying, if only. Once I rise up from the stupor of depression, I accept. This is what it is. This is the reality. I never bargained for it. I never wanted it. Never in a million years can I have dreamt that this was going to be my life. But once you accept it, once there's acceptance, you close out the cycle of grief and you can move on to consolation. Kol HaMis'avel al Yerushalayim. If you accept the grief of the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, Zocha Bara B'Simchasa, then you can move on to consolation. Then you can move on to something great. Then you can move on to accomplish something incredible. And how true this is, not just for the Beis HaMikdash, but for our lives. We're so scared sometimes to face our life grief. I'm so scared to acknowledge the shattered dreams, the unrealized desires, the aspirations that just simply fell by the wayside. I'm scared. I'm scared to look at them because I don't want to feel bad about myself. I don't want to feel negative. I don't want to get down on myself. And my friends, you don't have to feel bad about yourself or get down on yourself, because the truth is, we all have those unrealized dreams, aspirations, and goals. But the only way to move on is to be able to look them in the eye. To be able to say, yeah, I failed here. I failed there. I fell over here. That dream could have made it happen, but never did. That aspiration, I could have brought it to fruition or actualized it, but I didn't. That setback, this, own it. Accept it. And once you own it and accept it, you could properly grieve for that which could have been, but will be no longer. But the amazing part is, once you close out that cycle, you have the ability to go ahead and move forward. You know, you find this all in all areas. When I was learning this concept today, it's so incredibly life-affirming. Because think about this, even for a moment, in the context of marriage. How many times do couples get caught up with their conception of what their relationship should be? This is my ideal. This is what it should be. A husband should be like this. And a wife should be like this. And a marriage should be like this. Aye, but you're not like that. And your spouse is not like that. And your marriage is not like that. So there's a grieving process in that. So meaning, you're telling me that the marriage I thought I would have is not the one that I'm going to have, or that I do have. And then I go through all the different, I can't believe this. I can't believe this is happening. Why? When did you change so dramatically? Anger. Maybe if I would have done this, woe is me that this is my plight. But here's the power. If you accept that the marriage you have maybe is not the one that you imagined, once you accept it, you close out the cycle of grief and you can put your kolchos into forging and creating something new. You could plug this paradigm into anything in life. And it is so affirming, and it gives you back the reins of your existence, because so often we just become fixated on what we wanted life to be like. What I wanted, you fill in the blank, marriage, relationships, career, personal identity, whatever it is all what I wanted. And it's not that. It's not that. And I'm so consumed with what it's not. Instead, if I just accept it for what it is, and maybe, yes, grieve, that I don't have the life that I want. Maybe I don't even have the marriage that I want. Maybe I don't even have the kids that I want. Maybe I don't have the career that I want. Maybe I don't have the identity that I want. But the moment I accept it for what it is, is the moment that then I have the ability to move on to something else. I don't mean something else like another marriage or another set of kids. I mean something else that I can build the next stage. Chazal tell us, get to the acceptance level of grief. Once you accept the realities of the painful circumstances of your life, accept it. Stop railing against it. Then you'll use your koach and meretz Hashem to build a beautiful next chapter. But there's another piece to this. The other piece the Gemara says in number 7 is as follows. The Gemara says, Amar Rava, b'sha'a shemachnisin adam ladin, after 120, when a person is brought into HaKadosh Baruch Hu for divine judgment, omrim lo, they say to the individual, tzipisa li Yeshua, did you wait, or literally did you look out for redemption? So this is an, so of course, on the most basic level, the way the Gemara is saying it is, I have an obligation, like the Rambam says, achake lo b'chol yom sheyavo, I have to wait for Mashiach any day that he comes. And so one of the questions that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to ask me after 120 is, at the end of the day, did I wait for Mashiach every day? Did I wait for Geula every single day? Tzipisa li Yeshua. But perhaps there's another message here that Chazal are teaching us, which is, do you believe that life can be better in the future? You see, my friends, a lot of times what happens in life is we get stuck in a little bit of a rut, of a cycle. And we assume that tomorrow is going to be just like today. And today was just like yesterday. And last week was like the 17 before it. And last year was like the 30 before that. And we assume that life is a self-perpetuating cycle. Whatever happened, happened. Whatever went wrong is going to go wrong again. Whatever is dysfunctional will continue in its cycle of dysfunction. And what Chazal are telling us is, you know, after 120, how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu measure our success? How do you know if you led a successful life or not, right? Isn't it a question that plagues our mind each and every day? How do I know if I'm living a successful life? And the answer is, Tzipisa li Yeshua. Did you believe? Did you look out for redemption? Did you believe that you have the ability to create a future that is different than your past? Whether we realize it or not, so many of us live as victims. We live as victims of circumstance. Circumstances happen to me, whether they be familial circumstances, life circumstances, and sometimes I'm dealt not the best hand in life. Of course, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so it's all for the best, but it doesn't feel the best. It doesn't feel that great. And so we assume that because that's the hand that I've been dealt, then that's my hand at the table of life for life. That's what I've got. And Tzipisa li Yeshua means, do you believe that you can make a different future for yourself? Do you believe that your past need not dictate what your future looks like? Do you believe that just because you've lived a certain way for however long does not in any way mean that you cannot experience a comprehensive and cathartic life paradigm shift? That if you want to change who you are, what you are, and how you live, the power is in your hands. Might not be immediate, might not be instantaneous, might take a lot of time, but the power is in your hands. That's the meaning. Tzipisa li Yeshua. Did you pine? Did you look out? Tzipisa means, did you look? Did you look out for salvation? Did you believe that in your future there's salvation? In your future there's something beautiful? In your future there's something magnificent? That you are not condemned to repeat the mistakes of the past over and over and over? And these two dialectics, these two pieces, are reflected in our 3 weeks experience. Because, my dear friends, there are two elements to how we deal with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? We don't have to get into it now, but the Baal Shem Tov quotes the pasuk from Yeshayah that ultimately highlights that there are two dynamics to our mourning. There's a mourning for what's been lost, and that's where Chazal teach us about acceptance. The goal of the 3 weeks is to learn how to grieve and to work our way through the stages of grief so we get to a point of acceptance. I mourn for that which is lost, and I accept that it's gone. And I accept, you know, I'm never going to get back a second Beis HaMikdash. Never, never. I'm going to get back a third Beis HaMikdash, and the third is not going to be like the second, and the second wasn't like the first. Because acceptance doesn't mean I accept for what it is, but I'll get it back at some later time. No, acceptance means I accept the loss, And I recognize that my life will never, ever be the same. But the moment I accept it is the moment that I can then go ahead and begin planning for my future. So step number one in the 3 weeks experience is mourning for that which has been lost. Go through the stages of grief to get to the point of acceptance. Own your grief. Stare down your grief. Acknowledge your pain. Because when you do so, you can accept it. And the moment you accept it is the moment you can then begin to build the next chapter. And then Chazal said the second part of the 3 weeks is ultimately an anticipatory pining for that which will be. I believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'havyosim al harkotshi v'simachtem eveis tfilosi. We're going to come back. There's going to be a beautiful Beis HaMikdash, which means what? Even after 2,000 years of diaspora. You see, you would think, come on, after 2,000 years, I'm pretty sure this is it, right? I'm pretty sure that this is kind of the end of the road over here. I can't imagine that things are going to change all that dramatically. If it's been 2,000 years a certain way, chances are it's going to remain that way for the foreseeable future. Yet we don't believe that. We don't believe that. I believe ultimately, again, that just because 2,000 years have been a certain way does not mean that my future has to be that way. At the end of the day, if I choose to turn things around, just like Baruch Hu is going to choose to turn things around, we're going to choose as a nation to turn things, I could change my future. The past is the past. But just because I can't change the past doesn't mean that I have to repeat the past. See, peace of the Yeshua. Did you look forward for some type of salvation? Did you look forward for some type of redemption? Did you believe that your future need not be a repetition of your past? These are the first two elements and the first two lessons from the 3 weeks. But then we come to a third lesson. The Gemara in Maseches Gittin number 8 on your sheet tells the story that is perhaps one of the most famous stories of the Churban. The story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. So, to make a very long story short, the Gemara tells us about a certain individual, unnamed individual, who was making a party. And he had a friend. The friend was named Kamsa. Friend, best friend named Kamsa. And he had an arch rival, an enemy, a nemesis, named Bar Kamsa. So the unnamed Balabas, the unnamed householder, is making a party. He tells his servant, do me a favor, go take an invitation to Kamsa, my good buddy, invite him to the party. The messenger makes a pretty understandable mistake, and instead of inviting Kamsa, goes to invite Bar Kamsa. Bar Kamsa gets the invitation, shows up. The Balabas, the host sees Bar Kamsa, get out of here. What are you doing here? How dare you show up? Bar Kamsa takes him and says, listen, do me a favor. I won't say anything. I'll just sit in the corner and leave everyone alone. House Balabas says, no, get out. Bar Kamsa says, listen, I'll pay for my meal. Pay for my meal. No, I don't want your money. Get out. Bar Kamsa is so desperate to save face. I'll pay for half of the party. Householder again says, get out. Get out. Finally, Bar Kamsa, in a moment of desperation, says, I'll pay for the entire party. I'm not going to pay for the entire party. Just let me stay. To which again, the Balabas says, get out. What part of get out don't you understand? Get out. Get out. Two words. Get out. Just get out. I don't want you here. So Bar Kamsa, so the Gemara says something amazing. The Bar Kamsa says, Amar, hoil v'havu yasir abana v'lo michu bey. So Bar Kamsa says, you know who else was at the party? This unnamed Balabas was clearly a member of the elite of society. And all the rabbis were there at the meal as well. So Bar Kamsa says, you know, the rabbis are sitting there. They see all that was happening and no one said anything. So the fact that no one said anything clearly indicates that the rabbis are okay with such behavior. So Bar Kamsa is enraged. He goes to the Caesar. And remember again, this is before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, right before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. He goes to the Caesar, says, Caesar, the Jews have revolted against you, have rebelled against you. Caesar says, how do you know? So Bar Kamsa, I'll show you. Send them an offering, and you'll see they're not going to offer up your carbon. They're not going to offer up your offering as a sign of defiance to you. So Caesar says, fine, let's see. Caesar sends an animal. And Bar Kamsa, what he does is, the Gemara is a machlokis, either he went out and he split the lip of the animal or did something to the eye. He injured the animal in a way that by the idolaters would not be considered to be a blemish, but for Jews, for the Beis HaMikdash, is a blemish. So my friends, imagine the scene. the animal from the Caesar shows up in the Beis HaMikdash, right? The Caesar sent an animal to be offered up in the temple of the Jews. And by the way, who brings it? None other than Bar Kamsa. Bar Kamsa. So everybody knows that something is up. Something is up. So the rabbis have this whole machlokas. What should we do with this carbon? It's the Caesar's carbon. How can we not offer it? So the rabbis discuss this and they say, you know what? Because it's the Caesar's carbon, we have to go ahead and offer it up. Offer it up. So one of the sages, a man by Rabbi Zecharia ben Avkalos, says, no, chas v'shalom, you can't offer it up. Right? So the rabbi said, we have to offer it up, right? This is like shalom malchus. You have to keep shalom with the local monarchy. Zecharia ben Avkalos says, no, you can't offer it up. Because if you offer it up, people will assume that therefore you could offer it up blemished animals. Okay. The rabbi say, fine, Zecharia ben Avkalos, you don't want to go ahead and offer it up. Let's kill Bar Kamsa. Remember, from an halachic perspective, without getting into all details right now, that every right to go ahead and kill Bar Kamsa, right? Why he was a moser, he was a rodef, he was someone who was putting Jewish lives in jeopardy. So they had absolutely every halachic right to kill Bar Kamsa. Again, Zecharia ben Avkalos is chas v'shalom. You can't kill Bar Kamsa because people will say, oh, you see from here that the punishment for inflicting a blemish on a sacrificial animal is death. So instead, what happens? They don't offer up the carbon. They don't kill Bar Kamsa. So what happens? Bar Kamsa goes back with the animal to the Caesar, and Shaul tells the Caesar, you see that ultimately, again, the Jews rebelled against you, and that goes ahead and creates a cascade of events that ultimately culminate in the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara in number 8 on your sheet ends off with a scathing statement. Am Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, "And v'sanuso shabi Zecharia ben Avkalos hechriva es beisenu v'sarfa es heichaleinu v'hegvisano me'artzenu." Rabbi Yochanan said, now literally translated it means, "And v'sanuso" means the humility. The humility of Zecharia ben Avkalos destroyed our home, burnt down our temple, and exiled us from our land. See, here you have Rabbi Yochanan saying something dramatically amazing. The Churban, destruction of the Samikdash, all because of Zecharia ben Avkalos. Zecharia ben Avkalos, you could have offered up the carbon. No, you didn't want to offer up the carbon. Fine. You could have killed Bar Kamsa. You didn't want to kill Bar Kamsa. So ultimately, what happens? Bar Kamsa goes back with the animal, and Zecharia ben Avkalos, it's all your fault. Now, we have to understand what's happening over here. What does this mean that when Chazal lay the blame of the Churban at the feet of Zecharia ben Avkalos seems very dramatic and very overwhelming. So there's an amazing Tosefta. You know, Rabbi Zecharia ben Avkalos, that name is well known to us because of this story in Maseches Gittin. But interestingly enough, Zecharia ben Avkalos only appears one other time in Shas. And a discussion in Maseches Shabbos, brought down really in the Tosefta in Maseches Shabbos, with the following discussion. Listen to the discussion. Beisila Omrim. Magbien me'al ha'shulchan atzamos u'klipin. So this is an interesting discussion about muktzah. So specifically, again, I eat a meal, and there's, let's say, shells from nuts that I ate, or bones from meat or chicken that I ate. So remember, again, a bone technically is muktzah. Shells are muktzah. They serve no purpose, but it's sitting on my table. So the shaila is, what am I permitted to go out and do with the bones? So Beis Hillel says, you can go ahead and you can lift them up. You can lift them up and you can clear them away right away. Beis Shammai Omrim, Mesalek es hatav lo kula u'minara. Beis Shammai says, you know, better not to handle the bones and the shells directly. Instead, what should you do? Lift up the table or tablecloth and shake out the tablecloth. So Beis Hillel allows you to take the bones and the shells by hand and just clean everything off. Beis Shammai says, no, you should really shake out the table, shake out the tablecloth. Don't handle the bones or the shells directly. So the Gemara then says something amazing. Zecharia ben Avkalos, lo haya noheg lo kedivrei Beis Shammai v'lo kedivrei Beis Hillel. Zecharia ben Avkalos, he didn't paskin like Beis Shammai or like Beis Hillel. He didn't paskin like either of them. Elo, notel umashlich la'achar hamita. Instead, what did he do? When he was eating, he would just simply take the bones, as he was eating, and he would spit them behind the couch, right? They used to recline on couches. He would just spit them behind the couch. So this way, again, Zecharia ben Avkalos wasn't getting involved, right? He wasn't putting the bone down on the table. This way, you don't have to get into, can I clear it off, not clear it off? He wouldn't even take it. He would just spit it behind him. Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef said, "An v'sanuso shabi Zecharia ben Avkalos, he sarfa zahechal." It's the humility of Zecharia ben Avkalos that burnt down the Beis HaMikdash. Very strong statement. So again, the identical statement to Gittin. But yet, amazingly enough, Rabbi Yosef is making the statement over here in the Tosefta and Shabbos, where what's the discussion about? The discussion is about Muktza. Okay, so Beis Hillel says you could clear off the bones and the shells directly. Beis Shammai says, no, you can't do it directly. You have to shake out the tablecloth. Fine. And Zechariah ben Kolel says, you know what? I'm not getting involved. I'm just going to spit the bones and the shells right behind the couch. Shalom Yisrael. And Rabbi Yosef, so incensed with this position, is it's exactly this behavior, Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkalos, that caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And what's the pshat? So Rabbi Yamin Lau in his Sefer Chachamim writes something incredibly beautiful. If you take a look at number 10 on your sheet, he says something amazing. He says, if you look at the second paragraph, Hakishur Hanira Le'im Shu Shechacham, Rabbi Lau says something amazing. You know, we translate anvisanuso as humility. Rashi actually translates it as patience. Rabbi Lau, and actually the Chasam Sofer does the same thing as well, translates it as indecisiveness. You see, what Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkalos is doing over here in the Tosefta is he's choosing not to take a side. I don't know, is Beis Hillel right? Is Beis Shammai right? Nah, I don't know. So therefore, I choose not to choose. I choose to be indecisive, and I'll just spit. I'll just sidestep the entire issue. And while you might say to yourself, well, actually, that makes a lot of sense. By halacha, why not? Why wade into machlokas? And the truth is, if this would have been the only place where Zechariah ben Avkalos did this, no one would have said boo. It would have been absolutely fine. You don't want to get into machlokes Hashem, so you're just going to spit the pits or the shells and the bones behind your couch. I mean, hopefully your wife is okay with that. But Lamaisa, aside from that, go. Fine, it doesn't bother us. But what Rabbi Yosef is bothered by is Zechariah ben Avkalos. You did this before. You did this with Bar Kamtza when there was a situation that presented itself. And that situation required decisive action. You chose to be passive. You chose to be indecisive. You chose not to act and not to make a decision. When Bar Kamtza shows up, and everyone knows that the man is dangerous, everyone knows what he's doing, everyone knows that he's so enraged that he's maligned the Jewish people to the Caesar. And a person consumed by rage, there's no telling what they may do. It's time to act. It's time to do it. Yet Zechariah ben Avkalos remains indecisive. Nah, we can't offer it up. Because what are people going to say? They're going to say you could offer up blemished. I said, let's kill Bar Kamtza. No. Can't kill Bar Kamtza. Because people say that you kill people who go ahead and inflict blemishes on sacrificial animals. And Rabbi Yosef says, Zechariah ben Avkalos, this is the same man who couldn't decide. Halakha like Beis Shammai, halakha like Beis Hillel. Choose a side. Just make a decision. Whatever it's going to be. You know, you could contrast this story a little bit with, you know, the Gemara Tatsa Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We will study this in coming weeks, but, you know, we'll leave it for a different time. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was another incredible hero of the Churban story, was someone who exhibited incredible decisiveness. Did he always make the right decisions? Who knows? Who knows? People make the best decisions they can in the moment they have to make it. Could he have made better decisions? His rabbinic colleagues, including Rabbi Akiva, thought that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made terrible mistakes, terrible judgment calls, but he made a decision. See, my dear friends, the Gemara is faulting Zechariah ben Avkalos with the Churban because Zechariah ben Avkalos unfortunately demonstrated the dangerous midah of indecisiveness. And in fact, there's an incredible Medrash in Eicha Rabba, which is number 12 on your sheet. The Medrash in Eicha Rabba writes, tells the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Same thing as the Gemara, with one fascinating postscript. If you look at the end of number 12, the third to last line. So remember again, the Gemara Maseches Gittin discusses that part of what enraged Bar Kamtza so much was the notion that the rabbis were there, and yet no one did anything. No one did anything. And Bar Kamtza couldn't believe it. The Medrash says, by the way, who was there? V'haya sham Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkalos. V'haysa sipek biyado limchos v'lo micha. And he had the ability to object, but he did not do so. See, my dear friends, Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkalos was indecisive already at the party. Already at the party, he had an opportunity to stand up and do something. He didn't. In the Beis HaMikdash, he had another opportunity to stand up and do something. He didn't. Machlokes Yesham Beisol by Mukta, he had an opportunity to stand up and take a side. He didn't. Chazal teaching us that sometimes the pathway to destruction is not always paved with sinful, negative, or wantonly destructive behavior. Sometimes the pathway to destruction is paved with indecisiveness. You have to decide in life who you want to be and what you want to be and what life you want to lead and what you want to accomplish. What are your goals? What are your finish lines? What kind of existence do you want to go ahead and leave this world knowing that you lived? What's your metrics of success? Decide what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. Decide what you're going to put your energies into and what you're going to run far away from. Because, dear friends, as much as we're accustomed to learning that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of sin asrinam or because of avodah zarah, idolatry, or immorality or bloodshed, that's all true. But yet, through the eyes of Chazal, through the eyes of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yosa, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of indecisiveness. Because when you don't make concrete decisions about what you want to do and who you want to be in life, it leads to churban, it leads to destruction. So, dear friends, it turns out that from these three lessons of the 3 weeks, we emerge with three dramatic life lessons. Lesson number one, grieve for your churban. The 3 weeks is the grieving process where we go through all five stages. And the goal is to get to acceptance. Accept your churban. We all have churbans, right? And most of us don't have one, don't have two, but we have 15, we have 20. The dreams that have been destroyed, the aspirations that have just like fallen flat, the profound failures and disappointments, and we run from them. And I don't want to acknowledge it, and I don't want to look at it, and I don't want to be macerated. I just want to sweep it somewhere, lock it up somewhere. I don't want to associate with it. It's too painful. But the problem is then you're stuck in a cycle of grief. You can only move past grief, post-grief, if you get to acceptance. Lesson number one from the 3 weeks, which is the lesson number one for life. Grieve for your churbans of life. Accept your failures and destructions, because once you accept it, you have the ability to move on to the next stage of consolation and building. Lesson number two from the 3 weeks and for life: believe that you have a beautiful future. Tzipisa li Yeshua. Did you look out for salvation? Do you believe that your future is just a mirror image of your past? Or do you believe that you could create a beautiful future irrespective of your past? Tzipisa li Yeshua. I yearn for the Beis HaMikdash. I yearn for Mashiach each and every day. And the Beis HaMikdash I yearn for is not the one I had, because the one I had will no longer be had. And the life I had, even though we say, Chadei Shalinu Kikeda, bring us back to what was, we never really go back to what was. We have something new, something beautiful that's going to be different than anything that was. But it's going to be even more beautiful. Tzipisa li Yeshua. How many of us, consciously or even subconsciously, don't really believe that we have a choice to make a future that is different than our past? We allow ourselves to be victimized by the failures of the past and assume that those mistakes are who I am, those failures are who I am, and they will always continue along with me. No. Tzipisa li Yeshua. I could build something new going forward. And lesson number three, be decisive. You know, a lot of times in life, we punt on decision-making. I don't want to choose, but you know, no choice is also a choice. It's just almost always the wrong choice. Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkalos teaches us that the pathway to national and personal destruction is often not paved with sinful behavior, but it's paved with indecisiveness. We must strive to become decisive people. Decide, who do I want to be? What do I want to be? How do I want to live? What do I want my day to be like? What do I want my life to be like? What are my dreams? Not what someone else told me my dreams are. What are my goals? Not what someone else dictated they are. What do I want in life? Be decisive, because the reins of your life rest in your hands. So, my dear friends, if we, in Emirat Hashem, learn these three lessons from the 3 weeks, the three life lessons from the 3 weeks, and we begin to internalize them inside of ourselves, and we use this period of time, you know, sometimes a person thinks that they fulfill the obligation of the 3 weeks, as long as they don't listen to music or get a haircut or go to a simcha, I'm good, I've done what I'm supposed to do. Okay, maybe on a technical level, you've done what you're supposed to do. But at the end of the day, the goal of these 3 weeks is to grow. And if we're zocha to grow through internalizing these three lessons, then Emir Tzah Hashem, these 3 weeks cannot just be another 3 weeks in a continuum of 2,000 years. But maybe if we grow from the Churban, grow from our personal loss, plan for something better in the future, start being decisive about how we live, then Emir Tzah Hashem, we will be zocha that before these 3 weeks come to an end, Mashiach will come, the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, we will all be together in Eretz Yisrael for all eternity. Wishing everyone a wonderful evening.